Welcome to the Round 5 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name is Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Good to be back.
And we've got a long-returning guest, Faz. Welcome back to the show, mate. It's been a little bit of time.
Yeah, g'day, gents. Hello, listeners. It certainly has been. I think I was on an ep during the preseason, which was about 3 years ago, I think. So, yeah, good to be back chatting Supercoach with you, and, yeah, hopefully can come back for a few more this season.
Faz, I heard you're back because you're kind of doing pretty well.
I like to save it up until I've had a good week. So yes, I have been sprung there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the community was probably well across that I'm having a difficult time, and I'm saying this as I'm pouring myself a drink right now. It's tough.
It's midday, by the way.
Yeah. I'm ranked 40,000 plus, okay? So just... I don't want it to appear that Nuff Nuffs are giving advice. So Faz is here to drag the average back up. He's absolutely killing it. So why don't we start off with an update from you, mate? We haven't heard how you've gone since, I think it was, when we were still picking our team. So how have you gone?
Yeah, so season has started out pretty well. I'm sitting inside the top 4,000 this week. Ranks stayed pretty steady. I had a 21.46 on the weekend. Mark, I think you said you had a pretty good weekend as well, so we might save the worst for last, and you can jump in now.
Yeah, pretty good week for me, mate. 22.45, so won all my league games with that. Halved my ranking, so down to 11,800, which is okay for this time of year, because if I can keep having a few good weeks, then by mid-season I can sort of be in a decent position. Doherty was awesome. I think I just missed, I don't have Howe, I don't have Fife. The only major injury I had was Naismith, who's on the bench. And I guess the rookies that I did pretty well with and did some good loopholing, feeling pretty comfortable after this week and looking forward to keep on building. It's now that we're heading into upgrade season, I think now is where the real changes are going to happen.
Yeah, I scored 21.40. I was actually on track for a really good week. As per last week, my team's fantastic. You just wouldn't know it because I don't have Neil. Neil, of course, scores 150 again, which doesn't help. But really, the thing that hurt me a lot this week was Tom Stewart, who I only traded in last week. Goes down with a relatively innocuous injury, scoring 18. And I'm not going to lie, it sucks. I'm just trying not to think about it too much because otherwise I'll quit.
Your old team was Simpkin, wasn't he? And I think he scored, about 100 more than that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, listeners will know that I conferred with Mark, who recommended against Simpkin. But I pushed Faz and CJ onto Simpkin, so I should stop listening to Mark and listen to myself. That's the lesson, listeners. Anyway, Wingard and Mitchell saved my weekend with the last game, 143-136. So,
wow.
Look, some bright sides there. Dangerfield going with a 140. Like I said, my team will get better and will move me upwards. I'm pretty confident of that. I just need to stop getting some bad luck. So, swap Stewart out, bring in a new premium, and we'll get cracking with some upgrades pretty soon, gents. So, let's get on to the questions. But before we do, just a quick update on the double game week. I know last week we talked about what's going to happen with that Essendon Demons game. And Supercoach actually confirmed what would happen back in the last week. So around Friday, Thursday, they made an announcement. Basically, whenever the game is going to be played, it sounds like the closest round to that game will absorb that round, and what you're going to have is Essendon and Melbourne players essentially having a vice-captaincy sort of situation within themselves. So with Petrarca, for example, you'll pick one of the two games being the highest score, and that will count for your score for the round, and some of the details still to be determined, but I'm guessing for the price movements as well, it just kind of makes sense. We'll update if that changes, but something to note, last week we talked about how attractive these players might be if they get a double game week and they would be scored normally. Fairly frankly, it feels like the Supercoach administrators heard that the community would be aggressively targeting Essendon Melbourne players and then made rules to avoid that situation, which is more than fair because, I mean, this show would be fairly boring. I would be telling you to pick from Salem and Gorn and everybody else. So not the end of the world, but something to sort of keep in mind. So we had a Patreon, Chris Morris, ask us about the Bombers, Demons, trade-in targets. Certainly, they're going to be more attractive, right? Like they still get a bit of a bonus compared to an average player, but it's really only going to affect them for one round. So best case scenario, let's say they were going to score, you know, a 40 or a 50, you end up netting 150 score instead. But, you know, that's going to obviously be a fairly freak scenario. And even in that case, you're talking only 100 points. So it shouldn't be guiding your decisions. But once that game has been scheduled, there's a very good chance that that specific week, we might look at them as being extra attractive trade-in options. Obviously, the less rounds to go, the more attractive this bonus round or this extra security round will look in comparison. So just want to give a little update on that because I know we talked about what that might mean for strategy last week. Mark, from our discussions last week, did you have anything to add or any comments on that?
Not really. It was pretty speculative, you guys, last week, and you kind of had to be, which is an unfortunate situation to be in, but I'm glad things have been sort of cleared up a little bit. I think that realistically, it doesn't help my draft team, who copped a big whack 2 weeks ago, but I think that that's the fairest and best decision is to just have the best of the 2 weeks count as a score, and I don't think it's going to influence me to be targeting Essendon and Melbourne players. I don't think it's enough of a points boost, and we don't know whether, like, the games could be close together. You might get some restings. You might get some restings within games, so players playing less minutes. Like, yeah, it's not enough.
I thought that's why you brought in Andy McGrath, mate.
No, I bought in Andy McGrath because I needed someone that was about his price point or exactly his price point and didn't have a lot of other options. So, and with Heppel out, kind of figured that he'd play a bit more midfield time and he is playing as an exclusive mid. So hopefully he's got a big game in him sometime.
Travis, how about you, Matt? Any thoughts on that?
I agree with what Marcus said there in terms of how it influences our player picks. I think that if you were already considering somebody, say pre-round three, you know, if you're looking at a Zach Merritt or a Clayton Oliver to come into your team, I think that there's maybe a slight tiny bump, but I think it's all offset with, you know, the points that Mark just raised then, that, you know, risks of resting within game or they might only play one of the two games in that double game round. So I think that probably doesn't need to shift your thinking too much. If you thought Clayton was a good pick and if he presents some value in a few weeks' time, then I think still jump on board. Where I think it's the guys that we might have been trying to shoehorn into our teams a little bit. Christian Salem, for example, not a guy that I would pick in a normal year. I even had a few concerns wondering whether he would score as well as the other premium defenders with an extra week in there. So now that he doesn't have that advantage, then I'm pretty much putting a line through him and focusing on the more bona fide premiums that I've seen that scoring from in previous years. And I think overall I'd agree it's, you know, a little frustrating that this news came later than we might have hoped for, but it's probably for the best. There's already a bit of an issue in Supercoach that our teams can tend to converge as the season goes on, and that's with 18 teams to pick from. If it was in effect, we've got two teams that we have to jam as many players from as possible. You know, you'd be looking on game day at the team comparisons and you'd have, you know, two rookies different, but, you know, replicated sides otherwise. And, you know, that's not sort of fun of this game. So, I think, you know, it's a good move in the long run.
All right. Now, the crux of this week's actual topics and content and questions, et cetera, relate to injured and suspended players, which is a little bit unfortunate because, fairly frankly, this week is that bubble week where coaches decide whether or not they want to commit to early upgrading and downgrading versus now looking at, you know, just fixing injuries in our team. So unfortunately, that's changed the theme for this show a fair bit. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about early upgrading. All I'd say is if you somehow didn't get hit by an injury the entirety of the weekend, or if that's not affecting your upgrade cadence, then if you can, try and upgrade this week. But otherwise, consider a double downgrade this week just because of the caliber of rookies that have come through, and we'll talk about some of them pretty shortly. But also just to give some of the poor scores in the premiums a bit more time to percolate through. So next week, for example, non-Whitfield owners will be able to bring him in for 440K. So if you double downgrade this week, you'll be able to double upgrade next week, bringing in cheap types, including a Whitfield. Whereas I think this week, I don't know if there's a lot of bottomed out premiums to really look out for, except for jumping on guys who are already sort of on a rocket ship up and you're just looking to get them before they're unattainable. Anyway, we'll start with the questions. And the first one is from one of our patrons, at Hardwood. And he's got a fairly simple question, as he puts it. Where to with Jeremy Howe? So fortunately for his owners, unfortunately for Stuart owners, he scored bloody, 110 plus, whereas Stuart scored 18. So he goes out at a relative price high, which is nice. 540K thereabouts. What do you reckon, guys? You just trade to your best potential player? I've got Stuart. I guess I've got a little bit of skin in the game. I need some advice for a trade in regardless this week in the back line. And I suppose Zach Williams owners, probably few and far between, but if anybody took an early risk on him, he's out as well now for a month. Where do you reckon I should go, Mark?
Well, I think that there's two options really. And so most of the messages I've received this week have been about asking me for my opinion on Jordan Ridley. And I'd be interested to hear what Fads thinks, because that's sort of the get some cash out of this while you can situation.
He's still cheap. 410.
Yeah, he's still really cheap considering he's averaging 110 so far during the season, and I think he averaged about the same across the two preseason games as well. So you've now got five games of evidence over a player that's 410,000. So I think he's going to be pretty appealing for coaches, because one of the reasons being that although people will be potentially looking to upgrade this week if you don't have any injuries, your rookies just aren't worth enough yet. The Tyler Browns at 220,000 sort of players, it's really hard to do anything with that. Like, you might get 90,000 out of it if you downgrade, and then that's not enough for an upgrade anywhere unless you're upgrading sort of one of these mid-pricer sort of types. So I think that's a really appealing option, is someone like Jordan Ridley. And the other option would be a straight switch into another premium. I'm not sure who that is. Looking at the defender averages, Caleb Daniel, yeah, looks awesome, and like genuinely looks awesome in play. But if you look at the top 10 in averages, Doherty's been there before, Lloyd's been there before, but he's still really expensive. Daniel's been there before, and Sicily's been there before. So there's a whole bunch of like new players in that top 10 that are potentially, it's really hard to get a read on and whether they are going to stick there for the entire year. So
banking cash, Mark, we got a couple of questions about Geelong Kolo. 297,000. He scored, I think, 109
or 115.
So he killed it first game back. As a Geelong supporter, though, he's a dour third defender. He doesn't get the kick out opportunity. Like, but at the same time, a lot of weird defenders that we're not expecting to score are scoring this year. Like,
yeah. Do you like think the Braden Maynards of the world.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the game is shifting, right? And it's interesting. Faz and I were watching a bit on the couch before recording this. There's a lot of vitriol publicly around the state of game, and it's noticeable that the game has continued to shift drastically this year. And I wonder the shortened game time, whether or not that's played a role in accelerating it. But certainly, the amount of points going to intercept marks is unprecedented in my time playing Supercoach. Absolutely unprecedented. Yeah. And it makes these weirdos like Kolo look like potentially a legitimate pick.
I'd probably have to rely on your opinion here, mate, because I think that it'll be interesting to know what his role is with Stuart out. Like, I think that's probably the defining factor here. And so he's never done it before. Is he at the right age bracket where maybe this is his time? I don't know enough about him to do that. He is at a very, very attractive price point, though, at 297, if he could potentially turn into a premium and take that role. It's just there's a lot of gamble there, and you're really, really relying on one game worth of evidence. So personally, that's not enough. I do really like Nick Haynes, if I had to pick one of the more expensive guys. Plays that exact role that we're talking about. He's fit this year. There's a lot about him that says that this could be the year that he has a really good one, so.
What about you, Faz? You got some advice for me?
So my thoughts on there's quite a few players to look at here, but starting with Kolo Jasny, probably the point I'd raise and echo what Mark said, that I think you're probably the best place to speak to his scoring potential. But the game on the weekend was against Melbourne, and they looked awful going forward. you know, across the field, they didn't look too bad. Their midfield looked all right, but just going into the forward line, they seem to have zero options to choose from, and really looked quite lost with the way that they were entering the forward line. So, you know, if you're playing that, you know, the Dower third defender role, I think that's, you know, that's your week to score good points, because you know, the ball's coming in pretty haphazardly. If you're just good at reading the flight of the ball and you don't have a very good forward playing on you, you know, I think that's going to inflate your scores quite a bit. So I'd be pretty hesitant to use last week's score against Melbourne as the sole rationale for picking Colo. But if you liked him in the preseason, or if you've seen things in the past that you think make him a good selection, then, you know, that's good evidence. I don't think it should be discounted entirely, but I just wouldn't want to put too much stock into that. In terms of the other value selection that we've identified in Jordan Ridley, he's looked really good this year. I think Essendon fans have been quite hopeful for him for a few years now. He was a reasonably high draft pick, and he's just a bit, I guess, seeing him play more games this year, he's taller than I ever realized he was. I thought he was more of a, you know, a smaller defender, but he's actually, I think, over 190 centimeters. And so the fact that I think this is his fourth year in the system, and the fact that it's taken that long for him to really break into the team and cement his spot makes more sense to me now that I'm seeing the role that he plays with more intercept marking, and still provides a good avenue to rebound the ball. The only question there is, what impact does Connor McKenna coming back into the team have? And whether, you know, we've seen Saad score quite well this season. I think best he's ever scored off a, you know, granted a very limited sample size. It's whether there's enough points to go around between Saad, McKenna and Ridley. But it's, you know, you're certainly getting a good discount there at the 410. And he just scored 134 on the weekend. So, you know, even if he was to put in two mediocre scores for the next couple of weeks, I think his price definitely won't be going backwards, I'd say. And then when you get to the premiums, I'd be hunting value because I think that's just so important this year, that Jake Lloyd's looked good, but I'm just not willing to go up to 590K for a defender. So I'd be looking at Sicily's probably my pick, just because he's the cheapest of the guys that have done this before in the past. I like Caleb Daniel a fair bit as well. And then you've got Shannon Hearn. The Eagles have not looked good this year, but Hearn's shown in the last couple of years that he really can be a real top-end scorer. So if you can get him at 528, that's not the worst either. It does feel like a bit of a crapshoot, as Mark identified. We've just got so many new names in these top averages in the back line. So maybe it is worth just taking that risk on a guy a bit cheaper, you know, going a Colo or a Ridley, and you've sort of got some inbuilt insurance there because you've just paid a lot less. And, you know, ideally you want them to turn into a premium, but if they don't, you can trade them out, get in, you know, with some more evidence to look at, and then go, okay, well, I'm certain that Hearn's a top six defender this year. I'll bring him in.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Just because things are changing, I think the more that you can look toward the past as a predictor to the future, the more confidence you have in terms of picking future trends. But the amount the game is evolving, I mean, with last year's rule changes, this year's reduction in time, and then coronavirus affecting sort of training and how teams are playing together, we're just seeing some really interesting patterns. I think the main thing I'd caution against people against backline team members is just remember that at the end of the day, I think Sicily, you know, whether it was in the pre-show you said on or earlier on, Mark, but you mentioned that Sicily, it was on like 30 points at halftime or 20 points or something.
13 at halftime.
13. I've seen Howe in similar spots. It's one of the reasons why I didn't pick them, is that Howe and Sicily are great at rebound marking and at catapulting the ball forward. But they actually both still have defensive positions in their team at certain times. Like, they have to play negating roles where they will take themselves out of the play just to spoil, just to halve the contest. And in previous seasons, those fluctuations have been enough to call them non-premiums. But this year, that equation seems to be shifting a little bit. So agree, but just still recognize that, like, Sicily will probably still have a bad game at some point, and he'll still be cheap at some point. The back line historically has always been a place for discounts, and I don't really see that changing, even though more points have gone to the back line. The only thing I'd say in picking your premium defender is that if one thing is for certain, is that chip-kicking defenders in Supercoach are no longer the same attractive options that they were previously.
Rory, buddy, Laird.
Yeah, Laird. And you got to look at a player like Lloyd and ask, what will that mean in the future as well? Because the amount of scores that have been launched from the back line are very different from prior years. 2005 to today, I think if anybody watched on the couch, the amount of change that has happened so that that scores are now generated from pressing the ball and keeping it inside 50, it means that you can no longer rely on Rory Laird scoring points, transitioning the ball from the back line to the midfield with, you know, that slow build-up of play. You're now looking for the guys who are taking the intercept marks and slingshotting the ball forward. And so Daniel, in terms of consistency, is right up there. I think when you look at consistency, he's the one that gives me the most peace of mind in terms of his ability to protect against falling out of a top six defender because of poor downside. But then when you look at his upside, I mean, of all the defenders, Daniel's obviously not an intercepting defender, being as small as he is. So you've just got these interesting confluence of factors. I personally have Daniel right up the top. He's probably the only one I would consider in terms of consistent chipping defender. Outside of that, I would be looking to spend as least money as you can on a potential top six. And so, you know, that 520 mark, that Sicily mark looks okay. But potentially even, you know, Dude, he scored 48 last week, but he scored 113 the week prior.
The week prior, didn't he score 35 or something?
But, you know, like I honestly don't think, you know, a Sicily type is immune from that moving forward as well. Like,
yeah, I think that one thing to factor in here is that Collingwood changed their defense up a bit with Madgan coming in, which allowed Howe to be a bit freer. Hawthorn have changed their defense a bit with McAvoy going back and Frost coming in. And so Sicily can be a bit freer. And just thinking of Ridley from the Bombers, he has Francis, Hooker and Hurley down there. And if one of those got injured, you'd have BZT come in. So he would always be that sort of fourth tall. And so they are, those guys in particular are actually being freed up in the defense to play that intercept marking and rebound role.
I'm 80% to bring in Sicily this week. He's averaged 105. Not last year, but the year prior, in a season where intercepting defenders weren't scoring that much. So it shows you Sicily's upside potential. And you add in the fact that, yes, Mark, you're absolutely right. He's playing less of a defensive position now than he has prior. And also just looking at the shape of his scores, he scored 70, 96, 128, and 114. He went down 12K in his first price movement and then went up a little bit. But he's only 10K more than his starting price point. His break even this week is 60. So if you want to get on Sicily and you think he's got a few big games in him, like 520 is potentially a decent price, because true price, if he's a real premium moving forward, could be closer to that 550 mark if he hasn't had a poor game here or there. So Sicily's probably the guy I'm looking at most closely, and Daniel would be a close next, just because from a kicking point of view, he seems to be the chief distributor back down for the Bulldogs. All right, let's move off the back line and into the midfield then. We've got a question here from Robert Hughes, one of our patrons, asking about Nathan Fyfe and whether or not he should hold him. Now, there's a chance that he's back in a few weeks. I've heard one, potentially only 1 week, but, you know, longest maybe three with a minor hamstring. What do you reckon, Mark?
I think, was it last year that Fyfe was said that he was going to come back in 2 weeks, and I think he was gone for like six or something? Or was that 2018? I think it might have been 2018, where I just held him through this period where the injury list said 1 to 2 weeks, and then it just stretched to 3 to 4 to 6, and it just cost me so many points. It actually ruined my entire season. That was enough for me to probably just be a bit wary on Fyfe's injury reports, and the fact that he just has such a long history of missing games. Even though he's been completely dominating, he seems to like the shortened quarters and he has contested possession, he kicks goals, he's the right sort of player for this competition. But I just don't trust that he's going to be back in a shortened amount of time, and that he won't go down again. So I guess that's the reason why I didn't pick him to start, and that's the reason why I would be a little bit trigger happy with Fyfe missing a few weeks. And I guess the discussion about who we go to is a pretty interesting one as well.
So how about Zach Merritt then? What do you reckon about trading him out, being only out for the 1 week with a suspension? Obviously, Fyfe, I think a lot of people would be thinking that two is a legitimate consideration, because if it's just one, it feels like that's the limit where it's something that you're willing to cop. Having said that, I mean, I traded Kelly out last week. I feel like, especially while we've got these bonus trades up our sleeve, if there's nothing else for you to do, you know, getting an extra premium score on field certainly can't hurt. But I guess this week being that cusp week on whether or not you actually trade or not, what do you reckon, Mark, about Merritt?
I think you'd have to be in a very, very good position to be trading him out. I don't think that you trade out players for 1 week injuries normally. I know that you did with Kelly, and I'm glad that that burnt you a little bit. As a big Kelly owner, I'm very glad about that. I think that there's no way I'd be trading him on 1 week. Even though we are in that situation where it's not quite upgrade season yet, I would be encouraging people just to hold for 1 week. And it's a suspension as well. It's not like he'd have to recover from the injury.
Yeah.
He might have a bit of a sore hand, that's all.
I traded out Kelly because I'm worried about his role as well. My take was he seems to be moving to the wing as some of their younger bullish midfielders get more time in the guts. So that's the only reason I've moved Kelly. I don't necessarily see Merritt having that same risk. If anything, Merritt could still have upside potentially. I don't see him going backwards per se. So I'd agree with your sentiments, Faz.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Kelly analogy, it doesn't quite work just because of the difference in circumstances. And I'd agree that there is potential for Zach to even be going up a level with Heppel likely to miss most of this season with that ankle injury. There could be an opportunity there for Zach to step up and essentially become Essendon's number one midfielder. I'm sure Mark's hoping it's Andrew McGrath rather than Zach. But, you know, there's some points going in the midfield there, which Zach could well and truly grab. And I'd agree that unless you literally can't find a single other thing to do with your team this week, you know, and with guys like Stephen Hill on the radar, I think probably are better things to do with your trades. I'd be holding on to Zach for the 1 week injury.
All right, so why don't we talk about trade-in targets for Fife then? Now, non-Neil owners, looking at that expensive price tag. I mean, last week we'd evaluated it and we talked about him being potentially a little bit overs and to take a punt elsewhere. So that's what I'm going to continue with. Now, we didn't have either of you two gents on board, obviously, but what do you reckon about that, Mark? Passing on Neil at the current price tag and picking somebody else, does that resonate with you, or would you be seeing this as an opportunity to bring Neil in?
Yeah, there's a few people who asked me about that this week, and my opinion is that I don't think you can pay 763 for anyone unless he's going to average 140 plus from here, which is not an average we've seen before. Realistically, unless he's going to be Ablett territory and he's your only captain choice and you're going to pick him as a captain every week, then I just think that that's too much money to be paying for someone, and it's just going to set you back in other parts of the field. And so he can't average 160 for the rest of the year. We've never seen anything like that before. It's insanely unlikely that that would actually happen. He will have a down game at some stage and there will be another chance to pick him up. As a Neil owner, maybe it's easy to say that, and I'll be hoping that he can just continue this run for a bit longer. But yeah, I just think it's too much to pay. So I'd be looking at other options. And the other two or three that probably stand out for me are
McRae,
Bontempelli.
With Dunkley out.
Yeah, McRae was actually out, and he did return to the midfield this week, and yep, he was tagged and still got 94. So I think that's a really good sign from McRae. Bont had 166, although I think that the tag comes straight back to him this week. And
Mitchell
finally had a good one.
Pisses me off.
But he's got De Boer this week.
Yeah, he does.
Unless De Boer goes to Wingard or O'Meara, I guess.
Thank God that's one pick that's looking okay, Wingard. Anyway, back onto the real topic. Faz, how about you? Do those picks resonate? Anybody that Mark's missed there?
So I'd agree on probably just need to let Neil pass. If we take Fife out of it for a sec, which I think is fair given we're looking for Fife replacements, Neil ends up being more than $140,000 more expensive than the next most expensive midfielder, which is just insane. Still early days in the season, and you've got a more than 140K gap between Neil and Travis Boak, who's, I think, surprisingly the next most expensive midfielder outside of Fife. I like the options that you've mentioned. I think both the Dogs midfielders are good value at the moment. I've got McRae already and looking quite closely at Bontempelli. But just to throw another name into the mix, Hugh McCluggage is one that I think presents a bit of value at the moment. Only in 5% of teams, he's at $535,000 right now. Started the season off a little slowly with an 85 and 66, but his last 2 weeks have been 155 and 141. So if you do want to use the Fife injury as a as an opportunity to bank some cash for future week upgrades, which again I think is a pretty good way to play it to try and turn this negative into a positive, McCluggage to me looks like a good one. Brisbane are looking pretty strong again this year, plays a pretty lucrative role out on that wing and is just a great ball user. So I think we'll can do a fair bit without having to get huge disposal numbers each week. So I probably would have the two Dogs players above him just because of their, they've done this in previous seasons and have shown that premium scoring across full seasons in the past. But I like McCluggage as a bit of a left field option as well.
Yeah, I think 575 for Bontempelli will be hard to beat. McRae at 600 is also really good. Outside of that, I would probably only be touching, I think, Tom Mitchell, Clayton, Oliver as other options. I'm still trying to pick for that pool of seven or so that we were looking at preseason. So I don't mind McLuggage, but obviously still comes with a bit more risk. I think something that is worthwhile noting is that halfbacks, half forwards and wings have been scoring more than, traditionally some of the inside mids and key position forwards and stuff. So the dynamic of the game certainly and scoring has certainly changed a little bit. Suggesting wingmen that highly isn't as crazy as potentially previous seasons. Because in previous seasons, I'd say that'd be otherwise pretty crazy. Gaff, for example, all Australian wingman averages 105. Like, it's that hard to score as a winger, but this year it does seem to be a little bit different. Mark, last topic is Naismith. Now, he's obviously a trade out if you've got him. It's more in the context of if you've got the other guys and you've also got Naismith, do you trade the other guys out first or do you trade Naismith out first? I think he's done a knee. As recording, I don't know what the prognosis is, but I assume it's enough to just get rid of
him. Season, yeah.
There you go, yeah. Yeah. But what do you reckon, Mark?
I think that probably depends on your perception of the rookies this week. So if you'll be targeting rookies, then potentially you'd just get rid of Naismith. And like if you have five, you could maybe... That then you get through an extra week with Fife, and then the injury prognosis you maybe know more, and it's maybe less time that you have to do without him. So that would be a situation where I'd be considering trading Naismith. But if you're looking for priority wise, you can hide him at R3 if you want. Personally, I'll be looking to try and get that money on field as soon as possible.
Yes, I think it's a clear one. If you're in a spot where Naismith's on field, it's a straight swap. But I think there's the value that his price is not going to drop because he's not going to be playing. I think fix the glaring holes in your team first, because I would be surprised if I'd imagine Naismith's going to be a cash-making trade for most people, that they'll be downgrading to a Darcy Cameron type or, I don't know how to say it, Zeri from North Melbourne, and then you're putting that cash elsewhere. So I think that, maybe there's ways that you can manufacture a trade to turn Naismith directly into a premium if your team is set up correctly to do that. But if it's more a case of just making the money off Naismith, I'd say most people will have some sort of correction trade they have to make this week. So if you're, for example, having to trade Fife to another premium and then you're just doing a Naismith downgrade, I'd be tempted to leave that for next week, so long as you're happy with the options that are available. But I think Zeri didn't score particularly well, and you could probably wait another week to see what his spot's like in the north side if that's who you're looking at. And so I'd be leaning towards, fixing the other problems first and leaving Naismith for next week.
Yep. All right, let's finish with rookies. And this question is from one of our patrons, Tandy. And he's just asking about what the best downgrade targets are for the week. The two that I've got the most questions are Young and Hill. Both are expensive, both play for Freo. Young in the back line, 220. Hill, def forward, swings nicely with Brander, 190. Young's actually played three games. He scored 40, 40, and then 109. That's why people are looking at him. Hill, he was supposed to play last week, ended up being a late out, played this week, scored 73, looked really composed down back, playing the half back role this year, which he's done in patches in the past, but I don't think he's spent a full season there in quite a while, certainly not probably since he's been a rookie. Even then, I think it was a winger. So, yeah, some unknown in terms of scoring potential. Outside of him, I think Sarong's attracted a bit of attention as well, 170K. Notably, too, I think he was in 10-plus center bounces, so he's also getting time in the guts, which is obviously what you would like. Tom Green, a guy we started, a lot of us started with, he's now at 199K. He scored 90-plus, having a ripper game in the midfield. So I think those are probably the standout targets, but wondering if you consider any of them a must-have or sort of stand above the rest that you are looking to actively trying to bring in. Mark, any thoughts on these rookies?
Yeah, sure. I think Hill does really stand out. He's had, I think, six seasons averaging above 80 before. And if you got anywhere near that, even at 190, that'd be a really, really good result. If you can have someone sit in that, because he can swing back or forward that F6 or D6 spot averaging 80 till later in the season, that would be a huge...
Does it concern you he did that mostly in the midfield, though, and he's now on halfback, Mark?
Potentially. I think that given his quality and how well he scored in the first quarter on the weekend, where he scored almost all his points in that first quarter and then ran out of half, I just think that his upside is high enough that at 190, I think that you kind of almost have to bring him in. Like, I can understand if he didn't, and I can definitely see this not working out. Like, he could, given his injury history, he could 100% get injured. But if he doesn't, then I'd expect him to score quite well. And at 190, that's just going to be a huge, huge advantage for the teams that get him. So from that perspective, I think that it's a risk that I will take this week. And did you bring him in last week in the end?
No, I went with Williamson in the end.
Okay. Which, and you'd be happy with that.
Okay. Yeah.
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 The other thing that really sells Hill is that he can switch with Brander.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. I wonder, though, Mark, we're starting to see some interesting alternate sources of cash generation emerge after price movements have played a factor. And the guy I guess I'm referring to here is Jack Riewoldt, right? Like, Jack Riewoldt at 260 versus Stephen Hill at 190. Sure, on field, I'm pretty certain Hill has a decent chance of beating him. But certainly from a cash generation point of view, you'd think Jack Riewoldt would be a fair contender at only 70K more.
You'd want Jack to show something. And he did average 70 from 10 games last year, which is not good enough at 260,000. So even though his record previous to that is really good, I'd want to see something from Jack first and the Tigers, I guess.
I guess Stephen Hill, I think if you saw him as an 80 plus, would be fairly clear. I just think like 70, 75 start to get into the gray area because most rookies can average 60, 65. And then I'm not sure you want to pay an extra 70K for 10 points per game. Like, I don't know how, stacks up quick enough.
So I think that the other factor that you're taking into consideration then is that all the players that you listed are in that 150K plus bracket. So, like, if you're looking at relative savings to other options, they're not really there.
That's a good point. That a lot of the rookies that are most attractive are not 120K guys, but a little bit more at the moment. Care to weigh in, Faz?
Yeah, somehow we've managed to talk about picks 7, 8, and 10 in last year's draft with Sarong, Hayden Young, and Tom Green. I'm all on board the Stephen Hill camp. I think, you know, as you mentioned, Mark, he's got that, I don't know if we can call it quite premium scoring pedigree, but close to premium scoring pedigree. I think at this stage of the year as well, because of the, you know, we're only coming up to round 5 this week, the rookies haven't really matured and we haven't gotten into that upgrade cadence yet. So I think the fact that Stephen Hill's plugging a hole in your team that is currently being filled by, you know, oftentimes a fairly circumspect rookie is playing on field. I know this week I had Rivers down in the back line scoring me a 33. Curtis Taylor came back with a 57 this week, but I think he was pretty – the week before I think it was around a sort of 40, 45 score. So I think that even in a, you know, relatively short period of time, you know, if we take the bottom end of Stephen Hill, which I think we'd probably peg at about a 70, rather than it being only a 10-point per game margin that you're getting by having Hill into the side, if you're comparing it to sort of the bottom end of some of the rookies that we're playing on field right now, you know, 40 points to 70 points, like that starts to add up pretty quickly where you're making 30 points a week. And I think there, you know, the extra 70K for Hill, when you factor in everything else, that there's just that you have to imagine job security. The only way he comes out of that team is with an injury or if he needs to be managed. I think he's got his spot fixed in the side every week. You know, there's the brand of flexibility. There's just so many positives on Hill that I'm willing to spend that bit extra to bring him in.
I agree with that Hill will be the guy I bring in, especially Brander, and then see how you go. Otherwise,
can I just ask, Marcus, if you're at Fife and Howe, are you still bringing in Hill this week?
Yep. One down, one sideways. Next week, go double side. But I'm a non-Whitfield owner, I guess, so I'm probably very much aggressively looking to a double up next week that maybe you might not be if you're a Whitfield owner. Yeah, it's a bit of a tough one, but I would tend to prioritize the rookies this week. The main challenge that we have this year compared to previous is that rookies go up after just one price movement, so we kind of need to see who's debuting this week to inform who might be a relevant option next week. So you would want to have a bit of a view to who the relevant rookies are next week. You know, if there are no rookies next week, then, you know, obviously this week, maximize your rookies. If there's heaps of rookies next week, then obviously this week, maximize trading in your premium. So that's another little bit of complexity this year compared to previous, is that we have to take a punt on rookies sooner. And so I guess we'd also want to see a bit of team sheets before we make that call. Is that, do you think that's fair, Mark, or is that being too reactionary?
That's fair, mate.
All right, why don't we finish up for the week? Any final thoughts from you, mate?
No, I think Ridley and Hill are probably the likely ins for my team, I think.
Two value plays, and I don't mind it at all. This is probably the last main week to be doing that. I'm guessing you're considering holding Ridley close to the entirety of the year then?
That would totally depend on how things play out with him. Even though he's
certainly not he's until risky. Rookies are off field, right? That's what you're committing to.
That's why we're very, very much hopeful, yes. But I think that like even the McGrath types, they're not really keepers. They're players that you're moving at some stage.
Faz, how about you, mate? Any final thoughts?
Well, just first of all, thank you both gents for having me back on. Very much enjoyed having an opportunity to talk Supercoach. The girlfriend's not been appreciating it in lockdown. She doesn't quite see the value in it. But, yeah, this week for me, probably I managed to dodge most of the carnage last week, so none of Howe, Fife, Naismith. I don't think Will Hamill quite counts. People probably get annoyed if I'm complaining about him. So this week I'll be looking at using a bit of the cash I have in bank to try and swap out Noble and Townsend, a couple of my pretty mediocre mid prices. And I'll be looking at current thinking is Stephen Hill and Sicily, and wait for Sicily to punch somebody in the first quarter and get suspended because he hasn't done that yet this season. So that's it's on the cards. Mm.
Wish our listeners all the best for the upcoming round, and keep in mind that this week is sort of the last week that you can use as an excuse to sideways swap. I know we got quite a few questions asking, you know, oh, I've spent so much time sideways swapping and it's largely been for naught. That's fine if it's been for naught. The reason why you tried side swapping is if you had brought in Jide Simke in side swapping from a premium at 380K, well, you got a guy who averaged 120 for 380K. You know, fairly similarly with some of the other the mid prices. We did it because the trades are worth so much more now and it's worth taking a punt. So even if it hasn't worked out, I mean, do not dismay. At the end of the day, you're giving a trade up, you know, with 3 weeks to run. You know, and a trade has very limited efficacy with 3 weeks to go, especially if you don't get any injuries. So to coaches out there who have been concerned that they've been fiddling with their team so much, don't be concerned. I mean, it was almost a concerted strategy to get the scoring right from the get-go so you're not too far behind like I am to not be in contention. I really wouldn't be too upset if you feel like you've been stuffing around your team a little bit. It means getting rid of Dan Houston types for, you know, Sicily types, let's say. It's opportunities for us to replace non-performing premiums with true premiums in normal years, we'd have to accept underperforming premiums for a certain amount of time because we don't have the ability to do that. So I wouldn't be too concerned if there's any of you out there who are concerned about that. All right, and with that, we'll sign off for another week and catch you for round six. See ya.
Oh, yeah.
Up the planes.
Top one, make it crazy. Top one, make it crazy. Top one.